Hello and welcome to a new series of The Media Show. I'm Brenda Power, and for the next 8 weeks I'll be exploring some of the issues that are challenging and changing the landscape of media today. And everything is changing, from the way we find and share news to how we access our entertainment. For instance, you may have come across that new drama series House of Cards, and it's available only on Netflix and the internet. Have a listen.
Move me online. My own blog. First person, subjective, 500 words.
Not gonna happen.
I'll go underground, back rooms, the urinals. I'll win over staff members on the Hill. They need a place to vent.
A gossip column.
No, we lift the veil. What's really going on?
This is the Washington Herald, Zoe. It's not TMZ.
Do you know how many people watch TMZ?
I couldn't care less.
Which is why print journalism is dying.
Then it'll die with dignity, at least at this paper.
You are stuck in the 20th century, Lucas. You lack imagination.
Maybe so, but right now I don't need imagination. I need copy.
Now, that was a clip from episode one of House of Cards, and it sort of captures the tussle that is taking place now in newspapers between traditional news values and new media. So you've got the young, ruthless reporter, played by Zoe Barnes, prepared to dump all ethical considerations in a rush, literally, to make the news. And, of course, House of Cards is a media story in itself, in that it is the first big-budget drama series from the online streaming platform Netflix. We'll be talking more about that later in the series. But today, our focus is the meltdown in the newspaper world. More and more are now deciding to drop their print editions entirely and follow the audiences online.
I want to talk to you about a subject we talked a little bit about yesterday, but boy, it's getting serious. In case you haven't noticed, the U.S. newspapers, they are folding at an alarming rate, and some people are switching to online only. Others have pulled the plug completely. The Rocky Mountain News stopped its presses at the end of February. That's after 150 years. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer fell right behind it, and it was almost as old as that. Even some of the biggest newspapers, the most well-known papers in the country, are bleeding red ink and might not survive.
That's CNN 4 years ago, when the U.S. began to see the first wave of newspapers completely closing down their printing presses. Others, like the London Times on this side of the Atlantic, continue to print but move their online content behind a subscription paywall. In Ireland this year, we've seen the dramatic restructuring of the Examiner newspapers and the for sale sign on the Sunday Business Post. It's just 2 years since the Sunday Tribune closed its doors, and at the recent conference on media freedom, many people expressed concerns for the future of a free press and even journalism itself. However, Minister Pat Rabbit pretty much ruled out any state support for failing media businesses. Adapt or die seemed to be his message.
More recently, the rise of social media and the advent of highly flexible and tailored internet-based advertising threaten the basic advertising income of all media, national and local, print and broadcast. Clearly, the stream of revenues upon which media depends is being redirected by the market. This is the future, whether we like it or not.
And next week, we'll be talking to Minister Rabbit about media policy and regulation. And you can share your questions for the Minister with us via email, themediashow@rte.ie. But just how challenging is the story for Irish newspapers and the tradition of press journalism? I'm joined now by the chairman of the National Newspapers of Ireland, Matt Dempsey, and Aileen O'Toole, one of the founders of the Sunday Business Post, who now runs a digital media company called Amas. But first, what's the global picture for newspapers? I've been talking to Emily Bell. She's director of the Tau Centre for Digital Journalism at Columbia University in New York. And Emily previously headed digital content at The Guardian newspaper. Like yourself, Emily, my background is in newspapers. I'd be very sad to think that their days were numbered. But is that inevitable? Is it the case that with newsprint sales falling, you know, with the trend towards online mobile consumption, that from now on we are going to be getting our news from screens and not from dead trees, basically?
You know, there will always be some printed newspapers, but the amount of them is going to radically reduce. I'm surprised we haven't seen more newspaper closures in the UK in a way, but we're suddenly seeing a lot of people, I mean, The Telegraph just this week in the UK saying that it was going to switch to being digital first. It's losing print jobs and it's adding digital jobs. The next logical step for publishers is to start dropping print editions.
And yet, both The Guardian and The Daily Mail, which both have very strong, effective online and mobile life, they've both seen an increase in print sales recently. What's the new business model that's emerging here?
I mean, The Mail and The Guardian, roughly, though they're very different editorial products, are roughly pursuing very similar digital strategies, which is they're saying we want to go for reach. You know, we actually want much larger audiences. We want to expand internationally. And we want, you know, that reach to really sort of have an influence. Now, I don't know that The Mail and The Guardian will actually ever see, you know, significant circulation increases. In the US, we've seen The New York Times stabilize subscriptions by bundling its digital and its newspaper subscriptions together. So we're seeing a sort of a range of experiments, and people forget that this is a really new world. You know, 15 years ago, there was still a legitimate debate about whether or not people should or shouldn't be uploading stories onto the web. That's not that long ago, and now it seems incredible that we even had those discussions. So things are evolving very, very quickly.
Do you think the industry itself is sufficiently aware of how quickly the ground is shifting? I saw the comments you made about Leveson and the fact that the findings are effectively out of date already.
No, I don't really think that the industry fully appreciates how fast the world of information is changing. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that, one of which is if you're very focused on getting a daily news product out, you don't have a huge amount of time to stop and kind of dig into what's happening in the world of information science and data science and computer science, which is really where some of these changes are taking root. And the second thing is that I think, which is related to that, is that media companies tend to have executives at the top who have very little understanding of or exposure to this world. You know, they have come from sales backgrounds or they've come from what I call editing backgrounds. Most of them have only passing acquaintance with the technical platforms that they're now dealing with. And most of them have not had the time to spend on either gaining the expertise or simply wouldn't be able to gain the expertise that really allowed them to understand what was going on. You know, it's been a long lament that this is changing. You know, the industry is changing into something where the leadership level and you know, from sort of, if you like, kind of section editors upwards, people with that level of experience and judgment on stories just tend not to have the other part, which is the part that says, what is going to happen next? How do we need to adjust for that? How can we get the skills into the business that that will help us to do that? There aren't really enough skilled technologists and people who understand this at the top of organisations.
And that was Emily Bell of the Tau Centre for Digital Journalism at Columbia University. Well, as Emily was saying, the undeniable trend is now away from print and towards getting our news online and via our mobile phones. While Ireland may be a few years behind what the US has experienced, we are going the same way. Print sales are falling, particularly among younger age groups. To get some sense of that, Louise Denver went out in Dublin's morning rush hour this week to ask commuters how they find their news and whether they still buy or even read a newspaper.
I'd say a lot of people are probably reading online, you know, they would be going probably to, on their little readers and all that they have, and just go to the news on the internet and that rather than buy the papers. Geraldine Curtin, I'm manager of the news agents in 6 Bus Stop on Grafton Street. I've been here for the last 7 years in this particular shop. Oh, there is a great difference, yes, there is a great difference now in the newspapers, especially the weekends. It's mostly the elderly people who come in and buy their papers. It's more the Euro papers like the Herald, and they buy the Daily Mail, which is a popular paper here.
The Metro. It's handy, it's free, and it's on the way to work. I also bring some of the papers in for the job, where the colleagues in there, they get their news on that as well.
Well, I suppose I check all of my news online. I don't buy the actual physical paper. And the main paper that I would look on online would be the Cork Examiner. It covers, I suppose, the most popular news stories. Then from there, I'd look at the Daily Mail.
Mainly just through the journal article, kind of on Facebook and stuff. You obviously see it kind of coming up in your news feed, what people like and what people share. So it's just as easy, like, to get it on the app. So it's a good thing. It makes people more aware. Like, if it wasn't on Facebook, Twitter, they wouldn't have a clue, because they wouldn't watch the news or anything like that.
You're not waiting till the hour to hear it or till the whatever print comes out in the newspapers.
Well, I travel by Lewis every morning, and on my way to work I buy off Michael at the corner there at Stephen's Green Shopping Centre.
Well, Michael, I'm a street vendor here at Hopper Grafton for the last 46 years.
I think I'll end up like HMV, I'll close because of it. Actually, the papers are too expensive at the time and people haven't got money to do it, and they can read it for nothing now off the internet.
At the moment, really, the only thing that I would have set up is kind of Google kind of Gmail alerts, and those would kind of highlight things, obviously, that I've shown an interest in to me and bring them to my mailbox, which I can then access from my phone. I think it's going to be very, very difficult for print to keep up. Personally, I do actually still buy the paper at the weekend because I like to kind of have it to read at my leisure and the crossword and things like that. But I think that increasingly it's going to be online.
And that was Louise Denver there. So it now seems inevitable that Irish national dailies, the Irish Times and the Irish Independent, will move their online content to what some call a soft paywall, where you pay a subscription based on your use, much like the New York Times and the recent decision of the Telegraph in the UK. Now, some form of paywall for online newspapers is becoming a growing trend, although the Daily Mail says that its popularity online has ensured that its advertising makes staying free a working business model. Aileen O'Toole was one of the three journalists who founded the Sunday Business Post in 1989. That newspaper is now up for sale. She has long since gone digital herself and runs AMAS, the digital strategy agency, helping people do business online. Aileen, if you were launching a media business today, would it be in print?
Most likely it would be digital. When we set up the Business Post in 1989, print was absolutely rocking and there were lots and lots of market opportunities. And our idea at that stage was to target one of those opportunities in terms of business media. But whatever, 20, 24 years on, I'm afraid the media market is very crowded. If there are any opportunities at all, they are in the digital space and they involved a very low cost model. I think the Irish print media has been slow to respond to trends that were happening internationally. Some of their peer organisations internationally made those kind of changes and made some very hard decisions that they would have to compete with themselves effectively, that their print and their new digital channels would have to go head to head in competition. Unfortunately, in this market, the newspapers didn't see that threat coming down the line. So they lost what I would regard as key battlegrounds in terms of revenue, such as the likes of the recruitment advertising, motoring advertising, now online property advertising, all moved online. So they lost that battleground. Now they're losing another important battleground in terms of the revenue base, which is display advertising, which is agency advertising, which again is migrating to digital platforms. And I think that they had this idea that print, come what may, would survive in its current form. The reality is it won't. And I think we're seeing lots and lots of evidence that it won't survive as we have known it for so many decades.
So then the future, obviously, they're late to the party, but would you be pessimistic of the chances of catching up?
I think they have to fundamentally overhaul their business model for a different era. That's what every newspaper company has to do. And it has to be very, very radical because the game has changed and the revenue model has changed. And you'll see this, it's happening in the UK, it's happening in the States, where a lot of the big publishers are saying we're digital first. They're repositioning their print channel against that. So you see that with the Financial Times. This week we've had the Telegraph decide that they're going to be behind a paywall. The Sun is going to do similar. So there's a lot of change going on within the business internationally. Some of that change is beginning to happen here because it's being forced on the players here and they need to play serious kind of catch up to hold on to their audience, you know, be it on print or be it on digital. The legacy publishers in Ireland have got to be very careful about how they steer a course through a very, very competitive marketplace and one where revenue streams are under extreme pressure.
So the restructuring of the Examiner, the impending sale of the Business Post, is this the deck chairs and the Titanic?
My heart would love, you know, the Business Post to survive and I hope it will. It has 40,000 people who part with their cash. They have a base there. They have a brand of 10% of the market on Sunday. So it makes sense to try and leverage the strong brand that it has and try and develop products and restructure what it is that they have to make it more commercially viable and sustainable. So I think with the right team, with the right editorial proposition, with the right commercial strategy, any newspaper, be it those that are currently being restructured like the Examiner and the Business Post or indeed other national newspapers, can survive. But they have to big, bold decisions about what it is they are doing. The essence of those companies is they are quality publishers. They understand their audience and they have an expertise in terms of packaging news, features, sport and so on. A lot of the new players don't have anything like the skill sets that traditional newspapers have. But I would argue that they're not leveraging those enough and not moving them into a different era for publishing. And that's what they need to do to survive.
Thanks, Aileen. So, very interesting point. Traditional newspapers not playing to their strengths. They have the quality, they have the trust, they have the expertise that the newcomers just can't match. So, Matt, now you're chairman of the National Newspapers of Ireland. You're also chief executive and editor of the Irish Farmers Journal from 1988 until you retired earlier this year. That makes you one of the longest serving newspaper editors in Irish journalism. Now, we know, I've been hearing, pretty gloomy times for the print industry. Mind you, the Farmers Journal is bucking that trend. You've circulation in excess of 70,000. What's your secret?
Broadly, we're a niche product, I suppose, which is different. It just happens that it's a very big niche in an Irish context, which is very fortunate. So what do we try and concentrate on? We've had an online presence for 10 or 12 years, I suppose. And what we did initially, and in fact until the last few years, was we put up the classifieds online as they appeared in the paper. But they didn't go up online until the actual paper came out, so as not to disadvantage the hard copy readers. Now, that strategy was very basic, served us well for quite a while, that we put them up free, and it gave us, I suppose, some feel for how the online area worked as distinct from the pure print. I think from an actual information provider, if you can call it that point of view, I really don't mind whether we sell our product online and get the information out that way, or whether it goes through a very complex sub-editing, which has to be done even if it's online, but printing and distribution process, which is enormously expensive. The important thing from our point of view, which sounds very selfish, is that the people that are involved in the broad agri sector, that they want to buy the information that we assemble and promulgate. So if they want to buy that in a subscription basis, we've developed now full iPad compatibility and all that kind of thing, they're very welcome to do so. And in fact, that's a marginally more profitable way of doing it for us than actually selling the hard copy. But hard copy sales, as you have said, have held up very well. But it really does come down to what is the content that people want to pay for.
Now, the key for you then is that you have a readership that is prepared to pay for content. That is not the case, or doesn't seem to be the case, for the mainstream media. Where do you see the future of print?
The future for media information, if the media has a sufficiently strong reputation for accurate, relevant and preferably unique content, then I'm quite convinced that there is a real market there.
How do you convince people to pay for content?
From the Farmers Journal attitude, we have always had a view that our content costs a lot to pull together, whether it's news or technical or market. And so we have simply not been prepared to put it up online free. Now, that's easier to do in a principled kind of way when you're a niche publication, even if the niche is large. But I think there is a degree of success coming. In America, there is some degree of success coming for content. And certainly, I think the providers of unique content here, there is a greater willingness to pay. I must admit that if we could see the mainline Irish newspapers charge for ordinary news content, then I really think that RTE especially, there should be some provision made that the news content should not be free. RTE is in a unique and privileged position, which Pat Rabbit, as minister, constantly defends, and I respect his principles. But nevertheless, where there are dual streams of revenue, both in advertising and in licence fee, then I think that does impose obligations on the other side. And so I would hope, not from our own point of view, but certainly from theirs and from the industry's point of view, that there would be, for Irish news, because there aren't that many providers of Irish news, of credible, reputable Irish news, that they would in fact put up paywalls as quickly as possible, as comprehensively as possible, as easily navigated as possible. And I think that consumers will pay.
So, Matt, in the wake of the Examiner restructuring and the sale of the Business Post, it is obvious, and you've said it yourself, that content is going to have to be paid for.
The trend seems to be towards having, you're allowed so many stories per day or so many stories per month, and then if you want to probe anywhere deeper, then you have to pay. I think each medium will probably work that out for itself as to what is actually acceptable to its consumers and customers. And I think it will vary. I suppose if you're buying, let's say, the Financial Times, Financial Times hard copy circulation has dropped precipitately in Ireland, but there are quite a few online subscribers. Now you're talking about a very different end of the market than you are where your actual passion is to get the Premier Soccer League's results from the UK. So then when you look at it the other way, people are perfectly willing to pay a Sky Sports subscription for very significant cash. I really don't see the fundamental philosophical difference, but other people see a very real one. And so far, there has been a reluctance to pay for good content to the same extent as Sky, we'll say, can get payment for the sports one. But I don't see any real fundamental difference between the two.
Do you have any sympathy then with the line which we hear repeatedly in the newspapers, people will not pay for content? Is it simply that the papers themselves were a little bit tardy perhaps in imposing these paywalls or expecting people to pay for material that a lot of work and expense goes into assimilating?
I think you're absolutely right. Firstly, I think the Irish media has in general been a tiny bit slow, easy to say that in retrospect. Why should people pay for content that they can get somewhere else free? So it does really come down to unique content that Irish consumers want to have available to them. So I think there are two very different ones. What you do need to encourage, I think, though, from a newspaper point of view, is that for consumers to have expectations that the content that they will pay for will be relevant, worthwhile, ideally unique, and not available that easily free elsewhere. That it is important to know what your readers actually want and expect. And if they get those two, then, in my view, they're willing to pay for it.
Matt Dempsey and Aileen O'Toole, thank you very much for joining me. And remember, you can listen back to this programme via the RTE website, rte.ie. Now, while online has disrupted, if not entirely broken, the business model of newspapers, it's also opened up new ways for readers to connect and interact with the press. The New York Times is one of the global media companies which describes itself as digital first and sees itself at the forefront of digital media. Margaret Sullivan, and no prizes for guessing her, seed, breed and generation, is the newspaper's new public editor, an independent advocate, sort of an ombudsman, who sees her role as one of giving voice to the reader. And Margaret joins me now from New York. Now, so tell me, am I right in describing your role as an advocacy type position?
I think you do describe it very well, both advocacy and as an intermediary between the reader and the New York Times hierarchy, which is mostly in the newsroom.
And I know the New York Times has become something of a digital leader in the newsprint world. It's positioned itself very much as a digital first news source. So how much does your work reflect the digital life of the New York Times in terms of its global readership online and in social media in particular?
Very much so. In fact, when I started about 6 months ago, it was with the understanding that I would do a lot on the digital side, which previous public editors, also known as ombudsmen, really have not done. What they've done in the past essentially was write every other week a print column in the week in review section. And I do that. I do write a print column still, but I have a blog and it's called the Public Editor's Journal. And I write several times a week in the blog. And I'm also active on Twitter. I've written about accuracy. I've written about false balance. In other words, the practice of saying, well, this guy says this and this guy says the opposite, so we are just going to go down the middle. And that I object to that because I think when there is a way of naming and stating an established truth, it is incumbent on the newspaper or the media organization to simply state that truth instead of just kind of doing this down the middle, he said, she said kind of thing.
Is there a friction then between you and the editorial staff in the New York Times? Because it does sound to me as though you feel you more, I suppose, have to take the reader's side.
Yes. Well, I don't always take the reader's side, but I certainly always consider the complaint from the reader. Mm. Sometimes I tell the reader, I don't agree with you, and I actually agree with how the Times handled it. Friction, that's probably true. I mean, the people at the Times have been very courteous, very professional. I would even go so far as to say welcoming, but there is an inherent friction there. There's no getting around it.
I noticed your comments in January. You said for the first time ever that the New York Times raised more revenue through subscriptions than advertising.
Something has to replace the print advertising that is going away because I think everyone agrees that that is never coming back to the extent that it existed 10 and 15 years ago. So it is a very positive thing that the Times has been able to charge its readers for an online subscription and have it so well accepted. I do think it's a very positive sign for the Times, and I hope it also extends to other serious news organizations.
Thank you very much, Margaret. Fascinating job. That was Margaret Sullivan there, public editor of the New York Times, whose blog, by the way, is well worth a read. And public editor is a role that Irish newspapers might well consider. I'm Brenda Power, and you have been listening to The Media Show. Next week, why social media is in trouble with the law.
I think it's important that everybody realises that what is illegal offline is illegal online.
And should the state get involved?
This is very far from being a new issue, and it's an issue which is very much regulated by existing laws already.
You can contact us on themediashow@rte.ie or use the hashtag RTE Media Show on Twitter.